Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Football on Off the Ball.
Not that Forrest did that, by the way. They were quite assertive, Forrest. But it behooves you to be able to play with the ball in a slightly different way than you have to do as the Brentford manager. And we don't know if that's something Thomas Frank can do. The early signs are not positive.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Good evening. You're welcome along to Tuesday night's Off the Ball. We're with you till 10 o'clock this evening. And coming up, we're going to be speaking to Brian O'Driscoll, who's going to join us in studio from 7:30 to break down the opening two weekends in the Investec Champions Cup. Munster trundling along, decent win against Gloucester in the end, but scratchy on Saturday. And there's been criticism as well of Leinster on Friday night, despite an okay win away to Leicester. Not a bonus point win. And there's this quest of perfection, it seems, from the outside looking in of Leinster rugby. So we'll ask Brian O'Driscoll if that's fair or not from 7:30. Between 8 and 9 then, we'll be chatting to Emma Byrne, Republic of Ireland legend as well. She's still involved with the Republic of Ireland in a coaching capacity, and she's also stuck in with Lewis FC in the third tier of women's football in England. So she's head coach there and an unbelievably busy woman right now. So checking in with her and seeing how life is. And then between 9 and 10 tonight, we're going to be catching up with Pat Devlin, who has left Bray Wanderers after decades of service to the club. He's not retiring. This is not a retirement interview, but he's got an amazing life in football, and we'll be getting him to recount some of his tales, such as working with Steve Staunton in the Republic of Ireland setup before 10 o'clock tonight. We'll also be getting Ben Symes into studio to tell us about his trip to Iceland last week. He was there for the Breiðablik Blick game, and he did a little bit of reporting around Heimir Hallgrímsson, our hero, our heroic manager after we...
Esteemed
manager, I think, is probably a closer word to it. And possibly somebody who's going to take us to the World Cup next year. So really looking forward to that piece. Busy 3 hours, as you can imagine. 0879 180 180 is our number if you want to drop us a WhatsApp message. We've got Cameron Hill in studio. Hello, Cameron.
Howdy.
Michael McCarthy's here. Hello, Mick.
Good evening.
And we were... it was a good Manchester United attacking performance last night on the show, which we were watching live. 4-4 draw. Bruno Fernandes was absolutely brilliant last night for Manchester United. He's been very good for the last couple of games for United. He's had a very good season. Maybe United's best player of the season?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I Fernandes is always among their best players because of how strong he is on the ball. And like his free kick last night was obviously immense. I question whether he's helping the team all that much, given the position that he's been put in that is actually not his fault in any way. But the United are very, very open. I do feel the positivity around last night's strange. But anyway.
If you're Bruno Fernandes and your form is on the uptick, it is a good time to deliver a bombshell interview, which he has subsequently done. He's spoken to Portuguese outlet Canal 11. Didn't know the canals went that high. Neither was Canal.
A lot of canals.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Wow. We've only got two.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. So, Canal 11 in Portugal. So, he's been lifting the lid, basically, on his failed move to Saudi. Al Hilal would have been the club he would have joined during the summertime. And he said, Manchester United wanted me to leave. I have that in my head. I think they didn't have the courage because Ruben Amorim wanted me here. But from the club side, I felt that if I left, it wouldn't be so bad. Cristiano advised me, but the final decision always rested with me. I decided to stay because I genuinely love the club, but loyalty isn't as well regarded as it once was. To be specific, it was the Soltinho's Pelo Mundo show on Canal 11, and he said he would have earned so much more money if he had left. I was going to leave a season ago. I won't say where, but I would have won many trophies that season. I decided to stay, also because of family reasons, but because I genuinely love the club. Wonder where that is. Mm. That could be anything.
Any trophies.
Many trophies.
Usually Bayern Munich, but that was the season they didn't win any trophies, because remember Harry Kane, the Harry Kane curse continued into 1 year at Bayern.
The potentially. The conversation with the manager also made me stay, but from the club side I felt a bit like, if you leave, it's not so bad for us. It hurts me a bit. More than hurting, it makes me sad, because I'm a player who there is nothing to criticise. I'm always available. I always play, good or bad. I give my all.
It's not me saying this, it's other people saying this.
Mm. Which, to be fair, is true. He is the best ability. He has the best ability.
Yeah.
Then you see things around you, players who don't value the club as much and don't defend the club as much. That makes you sad. Which, again, I've got a bit of sympathy for. One really interesting bit, which I'll get to in a minute, I'll just keep going through these quotes for people who haven't seen this today. If one day I have to play in Saudi Arabia, I'll play in Saudi Arabia. My lifestyle will change. My children's lives will be sunny. After 6 years in Manchester, with cold and rain, I'll be playing in a growing league with renowned players. But this part is the bit that really stuck out to me. I could have left like many people do and said, I want to leave. I don't want to train. I just want to leave for 20 or 30 million so that they pay me more on the other side. But I never did that. Who were the Manchester United players who've left for 20 or 30 million in the last couple of years is what I want to know. Or who were linked with 20 or 30 million pound moves? Because that is one of the really poisonous accusations you could make of any modern player, but certainly some Manchester United players recently, is that they get themselves into contractual situations where these super clubs aren't coming in with 100 million or even 70 or 50 million. They're actually paying less. And that additional money is going straight into the player's back pocket. That's a really cutting remark at whoever is being accused of doing such a thing.
Why should they not do that?
I don't know. Is this the new players apologising on social media for bad performances, that now we're getting players coming out and doing tell-all interviews where they said they were going to leave and maybe this is their final game? Because like, this is the second consecutive week, if you put Mo Salah's into the picture, where a player, although not playing as well, he's probably on the opposite end of the form scale, but another player has come out and said, well, I was going to leave. I think I might leave. Like, is that the new one now? The players are actually deciding to wash their hands of what's going on and say, well, you know, my loyalty is not being taken into account here.
I think Fernandes is fairly forthright. He's more forthright than Mo Salah and certainly more available than Mo Salah. But he is also like getting to a point where a new contract is going to need to be negotiated, because he does have the option of an additional year, but he's currently contracted until 2027. So maybe next summer there's a big moment coming in the career of Bruno Fernandes at Manchester United. Like, I would argue that there's every chance that Fernandes ends the season as Manchester United's player of the year and that they qualify for the Champions League. Like, that's a pretty good outcome for him. And he would be in a powerful position at United. They're deservedly
so. Champions League, though.
I'm saying there's a chance.
Yeah, I just...
They're one of the six teams.
I'd be fascinated by that five teams will qualify from.
I think so.
Who are those
off the top of my head? So Manchester United, Liverpool, Chelsea and Aston Villa are the four. And then you've got City and Arsenal who are going to be the top two.
Okay. Yeah. You know, like, then you have, like, did you say Liverpool?
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. Yeah, yeah. But you have, I think there's other teams that can come into it as well. I just think that United's form, I don't know whether it's willing it to happen. Like, Gary Neville was, you were in here last night, so you wouldn't have heard it, but like, Gary Neville was talking about, like, when they were losing 3-2, he was talking about, this is a United performance I can get behind, you know? And I know what he means. They were very, very good in attack, but the consequence of them being very good in attack is that every time Bournemouth hit two passes together, they were in on goal. Like, it's... football is a holistic game that involves attack and defence. You have to take both into account. And United were in, like, this is a home game against a bang out of form Bournemouth today, last night, and they drew 4-4. And all I'm seeing is how great Manchester United were. What's become of this club? You know, and they're getting into the Champions League, and they win tonight, they can go fifth. You know, it's
but they could get into the Champions League.
But okay, but I just don't understand why they are, like, why we would assume that they will.
Nobody's assuming
that. Terrible form has been over the course of
What I'm saying is that there's a very good chance to get into the Champions League next season. They're level on points but fifth at the moment. And there's a very good chance that Bruno Fernandes is their player of the season. Therefore, he's going to be in a very strong position next summer. That's the only conclusion I'm reaching from right now. They're absolutely in the Champions League mix.
They're in the Champions League mix currently as things stand.
Yeah. And it's a completely unpredictable league so far this year where, like, you know, Leeds United beat Chelsea. Like, that doesn't feel like it's an anomaly in this level of the seed. Like, everyone's taking points off each other. There's no real divide between, isn't it something like there's 4 or 5 points between third and 11th right now? Like, That's huge.
What Fernandes has, as if you're a Manchester United fan, is an unbelievable, like a Brian Robson, Roy Keane style. Like, he's in the fine tradition of Manchester United players who will lift those around him. And, you know, and when he's playing like he did last night, that's what comes across. And it's such a positive. But there is the other side of him as well that is a more sulky character and doesn't lift those around him, because when it's not going well for him, or when it's not going well around him or for him, he doesn't bring players with him in that regard. Now, he did it last night. That's what I'm saying. You watched last night with that recency bias and you're thinking Bruno Fernandes is the man we build this club around.
Yeah, I think he's had a good season overall though, and I think last night was his high point, and it's of a part that this season has been for him where he's been very good. That's just my opinion. Joe completely disagrees on text. The reason super clubs haven't come in for Bruno Fernandes is because he isn't good enough. If he was good enough, he would have went to Real Madrid or Barca a few years ago.
I don't know. I think he's at least close to being good enough. And I think with the right system, like, I don't think he can be one of two in central midfield and United go on to achieve anything significant. But I don't think that's his fault. That's him playing a part, probably as a captain. And all of the things he's saying about himself there, about his passion for the club and, you know, his non-humble humility and so on. Like, you know, that is all a part of it. That is why he is playing out of position, which is fine attacking-wise, but United are an open hole. Like, and it's like, it's funny because have you noticed that everybody stopped criticising Casemiro? Because nobody can even expect Casemiro. Like, you know, it's not Casemiro's fault that everybody's running through him because he's standing there on his own.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, magnificently entertaining.
I watched that match very closely last night and I could not figure out what shape Manchester United were in. From what I could see, they were playing two players at left back with Mason Mount ahead of them. They were playing no right back. They were playing no number nine. And they were playing about three number tens. And love, and do you know what? Great things happened when they went forward because of that, right?
And do you think when Ruben Amorim was asked afterwards, were you guys playing a back four in attack? And his response was, I'll let you guys figure that out. As in,
and nobody
can. Do you think deep down Amorim was like, I have got no idea, so I'm going to stroke my chin and pretend that I know. Mm. There might be more on Manchester United later on. Let us know what you think. 0879 180 180 is our number if you want to drop us a WhatsApp message. Cameron, I'm keen to get into your first story tonight. What have you got for us?
Well, Bohemians will kick off their SSE Airtricity Men's Premier Division season at the Aviva Stadium for the second year in a row. The club will take on Dublin rivals St. Pat's at Lansdowne Road in their league opener on Sunday, the 8th of February. 33,000 fans were in attendance when Bows played Shamrock Rovers at Lansdowne Road in the season just gone. Now, according to Bohemians, only the lower tiers and premium level will be open for that game, so it'll probably be a max capacity of 30,000. So not quite the lofty heights of what we saw in February, but still a massive, massive attendance you would feel. Meanwhile, Rovers will begin their title defence at home to Dundalk on Friday, February 6th. Also on the opening night, you'll have Derry City welcoming Sligo Rovers to the Brandywell. 2024 champion Shelburne will travel to Waterford. Well, Galway United will host Drogheda United. And the First Division begins the following week. Cork City's first match on their return to the second tier will be at home to Treaty United. While in the Women's Premier Division, reigning champions Athlone Town go away to Sligo Rovers in their first match, which is on the 14th of March.
Someone's been in touch to say, lads, the first two Manchester United goals were keeper errors. A great free kick, fair enough, but shouldn't have been awarded. And the last was a defensive mistake and their keeper saved them at the end. They are miles away. Like, I mean, they definitely could have lost that game 5-4.
The only thing I'd say about the four goals was, like, the four goals reflected a good attacking performance. You can obviously pinpoint or nitpick as to what exactly what happened, but they did look very dangerous, particularly in the first half.
We have some EFL Cup quarter-final action beginning tonight, Cameron.
Yeah, watching this with interest, Owen, because Cardiff boss Brian Barry Murphy wants his players to take the game to Chelsea in their quarter-final in the EFL Cup this evening. The Cork man hoping his side can cause a huge shock and reach the last four. They've already beaten Premier League opposition in the competition this season, beating Burnley 2-1 at Turf Moor in the third round. But Barry Murphy knows tonight's game will be a big step up.
So we've tried to be on the front foot as much as possible and to show ourselves in the most positive light. It's what the supporters want to see, both away and at home. Obviously, the level of competition you face means how often that occurs in the game is different. You know, against Burnley, we were very proactive and very aggressive, but there were still spells in the second half where we had to defend deep. And that's just, you know, respectful of who we're playing against and understand that every different team we've seen in the league poses different challenges. And a team of this calibre is clearly going to have the ball for spells of the game. and we have to show all different facets of our game to be in really good shape to compete with them.
Team news for that game tonight. It's an entirely changed starting 11 for Chelsea tonight, with Moises Caicedo, Jamie Gittins, Mark Guiu and Tyrick George among those starting tonight, while Cole Palmer has been rested this evening. Callum Robinson, the Republic of Ireland forward, starts up front for Cardiff, while former Ireland under 21 international Joel Bagan is also in the side for the hosts.
Chelsea, should they not be trying to win this competition? I know their second 11 is probably better than Cardiff's first 11. And I know they've got to go to Newcastle away this weekend. Is it potentially even the early kickoff on Saturday? It is, yeah, the half 12 kickoff on Saturday.
Yeah. I have to say, I think when you're as deep as them, and that Conference League winning team hasn't got a run out in a while, you know? I think that I hate when teams don't try to win these competitions when they get this far, I have to say. I think it's like, but normally that's for like a mid-table team who are safe and aren't in Europe. And I'm like, what are you playing the game for? Finish 12th in the Premier League. Chelsea are in the Champions League. They're playing twice a week. I think they need to make sure they are rested themselves ahead of Christmas. I think this is the absolute right decision.
They have 346 players to try and get minutes in.
There is, and also they're trophy laden at the moment. They don't need the trophy. They've won the Club World Cup and the Conference League. Two prestigious competitions.
You're allowed to say the League Cup isn't as big when it's the World Cup you're comparing it to.
Mm. I mean, we've had this debate on the show before.
I'm always on the other side of the debate. I know I am. But I just think in this case, I'd almost
pick the EFL Cup over the Club World Cup.
But that specific one.
Yeah. Maybe Enzo Maresca would disagree with that. You've got some rugby for us, Cameron.
Yes. So some strong reactions to the law changes related to tackle height, which will be in effect at the World Under 20 Championships in Georgia next summer. So just to remind people, trials of a lower tackle height set at the sternum had been implemented at the community level, but this will be the first introduction of the law changes to the elite side of the game. According to World Rugby, the trials over the last two seasons, including in the IRFU, resulted in an up to 10% reduction in the number of upright tackles. I know you heard from James Lowe yesterday on Monday Night Rugby. Let's just remind ourselves what he said yesterday. He wasn't convinced that the new rules will be the best thing for the game.
I just think as a tackler, you have a duty of care every time you go into contact. I just think that that's it. You can't say if you tackle above the hips, it's going to be a penalty. I don't think you can do that. I think there's, no matter the situation, there is a level of due diligence that you have to take into your own hands going into contact. And I think the game's in a confusing place at the moment. I think that there's incidents that happen week in, week out, that if you have a different referee, if you have a different camera angle, if you have a different touchy, that you can get a completely different result. And I don't think anyone knows what's going on. And look, there's incidents throughout the week, the whole time. I don't know if we talk about bringing the tackle height down. I don't think anyone goes in trying to put a shoulder into someone's head, but it's such a quick and dynamic game that sometimes incidents happen. And if you're on defense and it's your shoulder, you've got to, you know, go in and have a level of care that you're not trying to smack someone in the head.
Yeah, Tracy was also on Off the Ball Breakfast today talking about this. It's well worth digging that out if you haven't listened to it already. But the IRFU found an overall decrease in the concussion rate across the domestic games, so men's AIL, women's AIL, but an 8% increase in concussion at schoolboy level over this 2-year trial period for the reduced tackle height. Only 49% of players surveyed felt the game had been made safer. And James Tracy makes the argument that, do we want a safe game? Is the point not that it's kind of dangerous and that we want the big hits, and maybe it's not a game of evasion so much as a game of collision these days? The other side of it is, like, I know from talking to players that if the reduced tackle height is designed to eliminate or reduce the risk of concussion, it fails to see the point of why players are getting concussed and why they're getting repeat concussions. I know anecdotally from players that when they receive a really bad concussion and are out for a while and take a long time to get back, that their tackle technique changes. So they might be going in for a really huge dominant hit, no matter how low they are. And at the last second, they'll alter their body just so they don't clock something in the head here, get a knee to the head, or get hurt because of the memory of that concussion. So I don't really know how this changes that, to be honest. I think they make players at greater risk of getting a knock and coming off worse as a result of their tackle technique. I don't really see the logic behind this, to be honest.
Yeah, we're going to be chatting to Brian O'Driscoll about this as well on tonight's Rugby Slot. I'd say he is sceptical about this as well. Don't want to put words in his mouth, but we'll get his thoughts later on the show.
I think there's also you have to remember as well the reality, especially at top level like international rugby, is like the ball carrier will take advantage of this rule and it'll become chaos and they'll dip further and
we're seeing it anyway.
And I mean, there's never a sympathy for the tackler in this regard, and that's fine. That's the way the game is set up and everybody has it the same. But I just think that's going to get even worse.
Loads more to get stuck into in tonight's news round, which we'll bring you after the break. Welcome back to Tuesday night's news round. Cameron Hill, where are we going next?
Well, great news though, and a new ticket price bracket has been announced by FIFA for next summer's World Cup. Supporter entry tier tickets set at just over €51 or $60 each will be made available for all 104 matches at the tournament in the USA, Canada and Mexico. There's a catch. So World Football's governing body says the new ticket price will be available to a certain number of loyal fans of the countries that have qualified for the World Cup. So we're talking in the hundreds rather than the thousands in terms of tickets available for this. So if Ireland qualify, fans would have faced prices of up to €595 for the third group stage game against Mexico. That still stands as we speak right now, with the cheapest tickets set at €119 for the clash with South Africa in Atlanta. These supporter entry tier tickets appear to be allocated to the national associations of teams that have qualified. And of course, FIFA had come under fire after initial price bans released were called extortionate and a monumental betrayal by fan groups last week.
So the allocation is going to comprise of 0.8% of available tickets.
Ah. Thanks, FIFA.
Yeah. This whole story has been kind of mad. Miguel Delaney, I suppose, has been to the fore along with some other journalists in writing about it. What I found bizarre, and I don't know if we talked about it on the show, has been the weird reaction from some prominent people in America that's just like, what you're not understanding here is that we're really rich, you know, so obviously we have to set the price very high because that's the way the world works. And, you know, Miguel and other people are like, well, like, you know, FIFA's a registered charity here. Their job is to, you know, is to grow the game worldwide. It's not about making the most money from the situation. You go, oh, you Euro poors. Yeah, what do you know about it? We're rich. We're Americans, for God's sake.
The idea that it's cultural, that it's like, no, we drive on the right here, silly. Come on.
That's very much it. Yeah.
Were you saying that it would be an absolute pleasure and a privilege to be in this manhunt for the 1,000 tickets per match that'll be priced at £55?
I've made peace with this. Well,
yeah, unless Johnny wants a kind of Squid Game scenario where people are like literally, you know, going to really extreme lengths just to get those supporter entry tier tickets to be qualify as a loyal fan.
Yeah, that might
be loyal. Loyal to FIFA or loyal to football?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
What have you got next for us, Cameron?
Well, that overshadowed somewhat the FIFA Best Awards today, Owen, which I know you've been paying close attention to. PSG and France forward Ousmane Dembele and Barcelona's Spain international Aitana Bonmati named the top men's and women's players for 2025, respectively. Dembele's former club teammate Gianluigi Donnarumma picked up the men's goalkeeper prize.
Okay.
So that's an annual one, as opposed to by season.
Yes, I believe so, yes.
Well done, Dembele. Didn't deserve the Ballon d'Or, doesn't deserve this.
I'm trying to get up the 11. I apologize, I didn't know this was happening today. Cole Palmer made the best 11.
Mm.
Yeah? Again, hasn't really done anything this season, which is half the year. But
he did win the most important competition in club football this year, of course.
He did, of course, yeah. Mm. Well, you know, we were talking about that a few minutes ago. You know, you were saying the League Cup was more than that. I didn't watch a minute of the Club World Cup. Didn't value it. Don't care about it. Do you not feel like the further we get away from it and you see the badge on Chelsea every year, it does feel a bit cooler? It feels a little bit more impressive that they've won this tournament.
Really?
Like, I don't actually think it is. I just mean that, again, the further you get away from the kind of how dismissive we all were of it, so therefore it didn't mean anything at the time because, you know, it was a tree dropping in the woods. But like now it's just like this thing, it's just like this, it's this announcement that Chelsea are world champions, as opposed to actually living the day by day of it not mattering.
You've been hypnotized. Yeah. It's a twirly thing. Yeah. It's a twirly thing. You haven't managed to divert your eyes away from the twirly thing in the middle of the trophy.
Yeah.
You've been completely lulled into this idea that this thing matters every single time they walk out onto their pitch at Stamford Bridge. You think to yourself a little bit more, wow, this thing actually is real.
It's not that I think it matters. I just think it's... It does feel more significant than if they had a badge on saying, you know, Carabao Cup Champions 2024.
So I have the full team. No Harry Kane in the full team. So it's Gianluigi Donnarumma. Hmm. It's Hakimi, William Pacho, Virgil van Dijk, Nuno Mendes in a back four. It's Jude Bellingham, Vitinha, Pedri and Cole Palmer in midfield behind Lamine Yamal and Ousmane Dembele.
Fair play to van Dijk. He did it without even qualifying for the World Cup. Yeah. Club World Cup.
Yeah, huge.
Yeah.
That just shows...
Streets won't forget.
The great levels that he has as an individual this year. So sorry, who was the individual player that won it? Dembele.
Ousmane Dembele. Okay. And then Aitana Bonmati on the women's side.
Okay, great. Well, congratulations.
He didn't deserve it, by the way. It was glib and unfortunate. And I regret it, but I still don't think he was the best player in the world either last season or this year.
Do you want to run us through the cricket and the darts before we wrap up, Cameron?
Yeah, sure. The Ireland women's cricketers suffered a 74-run defeat in their second one-day international against South Africa today. So the hosts set a target of 376 runs after 50 overs before the tourists were bowled out for 301. Orla Prendergast coming agonisingly close to a century, 97 runs before being bowled out. The two sides will meet for the final match in Johannesburg on Friday. And eighth seed Chris Dobie is through to the second round of the World Darts Championship after beating China's Zhao Zhen Zhang earlier on a scoreline of 3-1. Scott Williams also progressed in straight sets past Pablo Nebrida of the Philippines, while 2021 winner Gerwin Price begins his campaign against Adam Gaulas at Ali Pali this evening.
Cameron Hill, thank you very much for Tuesday night's news round.